Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sport Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in science while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life. Today's topic is long COVID and exercise, and I'm Sarah.
My name is Agnes, and joining us today is Johanna from the Institute of Sport and Human Movement Science. Welcome, Johanna.
Yeah, welcome, Johanna. As far as I understood, you're almost graduating, right?
Yes, hopefully. I should be finished within a year, so let's see how that goes.
Okay, that's exciting. Can you tell us a little bit about your field and what exactly are you doing?
So I am in the field of so-called training therapy, which is essentially the use of exercise as a tool in the rehabilitation of different diseases or conditions. And specifically, my PhD was about long COVID. So that's exactly what we did. So we used exercise as a tool in the rehabilitation of patients that suffer from long COVID.
Oh, that's fascinating. So what is long COVID actually about? So what are the symptoms and how do you define a person with long COVID?
Officially, the definition says that long COVID is the presence of long-lasting symptoms after an initial COVID infection, usually at least 3 months in the past. So these symptoms or things that patients still suffer from would typically not be explained by anything else or any other diagnoses or any other condition that they might have. And they have been appearing ever since the initial COVID infection.
Why do you think that exercise might be beneficial in those patients?
We know from research and experience in the training therapy field that exercise is a very useful and established tool in the rehabilitation of, for example, cardiological diseases, pulmonary diseases, but also mental health disorders such as depression, anxiety, sleep disorders. I mean, the list goes on and on. And essentially, in long COVID, people experience similar symptoms. So that was the starting point for not only my research, but a lot of other research that has been going on already. And the hypothesis was that we think that exercise might also be beneficial for these symptoms and these people that suffer from long COVID.
And I was wondering, because I also had long COVID and I couldn't really exercise right after. Like, my body was really, really tired after like a couple of minutes at the gym. So are there some contraindications or some specific cases in which exercise should not be implemented?
That's a very important topic, actually. Yes, specifically for long COVID, it's important to mention that if the person or the patient suffers from the so-called chronic fatigue syndrome, and you can differentiate by the most characteristic symptom that these people have, which is exercise intolerance, that they shouldn't be exposed to exercise. So these people would probably experience a worsening of symptoms or extreme fatigue within a window of 24 to 48 hours after exercise or a physical or mental or even cognitive stressor that they experience.
So during your study, did you have cases in which you had to stop the training because some patients got worsened symptoms?
Yes, we had, I think it was exactly two people that we excluded from the study because of this specific thing occurring or this specific adverse event occurring. And we made sure, of course, during the intervention to screen for these kind of symptoms or for worsening of symptoms for the physical and the state of their physical and mental health during the intervention. And also try to even screen for that, of course, before. But yeah, like I said, it was still not possible to completely exclude these patients.
Johanna, this is really, really fascinating. But I wonder, so how did you actually run this exercise intervention study? So how does it actually work? And what were the main tasks for you in this project?
Okay, that's going to be quite a long answer because it was a long process. So initially, of course, you have everything that evolves around planning, designing the study, getting approval from the ethics committee, for example. And then once that's done, it's about the recruitment of participants. For me, that meant spending endless times on the phone talking to potential participants, trying to figure out if they fit into the study, listening to a lot of stories about their condition, about their physical and mental health. And we would then invite these people to the lab. So I was involved in the medical screenings. I was involved in the testing of outcome parameters as a second step, so as a second appointment in the lab. And then the main part and the core of the project was the training intervention, which took 12 weeks. Participants trained 3 times a week in gyms. Those sessions were supervised. So I also spent, I think within the first 1 and 2 years of my PhD, I spent a lot of hours at the gym, which doesn't sound bad for a sports scientist, but that's a different story. Anyways, I supervised the training sessions, spent a lot of time with the participants. And then in the end, we had again, of course, the testing of outcome parameters and wrapping up the study.
And how did the participants actually react to the training? So did you have some dropouts within your study?
That was actually one of the biggest issues that we ran into during the study. We had quite a high number or high percentage of dropouts, mainly because people kept getting sick. So our participants kept catching colds, bacterial infections, flu, COVID reinfections. So that was something we struggled with.
So how many participants were you able to include into your study? Had you more males or females included?
We included more females. If I remember correctly, 80% females, 20% males. That's, however, also reflecting the general demographics of the condition. So being of female sex is a risk factor for getting long COVID.
That's really fascinating. I did not know that.
Yes, I was just wondering, because you already mentioned the dropouts. And as a PhD, not everything can go perfect, right? Like we all encounter some issues. I was just trying to think if you also, besides the dropouts, encounter other difficulties in your study.
Major difficulty, which, I mean, it's kind of linked to the dropouts because it played into it, but the time schedule of the study was not as planned. At least we couldn't adhere to the timetable that we planned in the beginning. That's what I'm trying to say. So I had to really include enough of a time buffer in order not to stress out and to be fine if things didn't go according to plan, or we needed more time to recruit more participants, or had people dropping out, so we needed to find new ones and whatnot. So that was probably one of the major issues that we ran into.
And I go to the gym and the equipment is broken all the time. Did you also encounter that issue? Like, how did you solve it?
At the gym, actually, the equipment usually worked. However, since we were kind of co-using the gym with all the other people that signed up for the gym and were training day to day in this gym, sometimes it was just a long session because we waited for that specific equipment that they had to use, because of course we couldn't just tell my participants, just use, I don't know, this other leg press, because according to the study protocol it had to be this specific leg press, but everybody else wanted to use the two. But equipment breaking, that definitely happened in the lab during the study, which is frustrating.
So, and what were your tasks within the study? So did you work alone or did you work in a team? Did you have some support from others, or how did that look like?
I mean, my specific tasks were kind of everything, but I think any PhD student that has ever conducted a study can relate to that, because you're kind of responsible for the whole thing and that everything functions. But I wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for a great team of master students, mm-hmm. for example. So they specifically helped me out in the gym, supervising the sessions, which I'm very grateful for. And they did an awesome job. And then my supervisor, who was actually also the study physician, and without him, that wouldn't have been possible, because he also spent quite a lot of time in the lab with me, for example, supervising the cardiopulmonary exercise tests, looking at the blood samples, the ECG recordings, so everything kind of from a medical standpoint. He was also making sure that participants were doing fine from a health perspective. If ever there was something they wanted to talk about, we could always give him a call or have them come into the lab and talk about their concerns with him. So that was also...
So this is really, really inspirational that you have such a hands-on supervisor who supported you so much during while you were running this study.
I was wondering if some personal challenges occurred during this study and during your PhD.
Yes, I think there's no PhD or no PhD student that goes through this process without running into situations that kind of take a toll on your mental health, I would say. So it's just a lot of stress for me personally, being responsible for a project, being responsible for quite a big number of participants that kind of expect you to accompany them during this process. So I had to make sure I'm reachable for them. For example, it was hard to maybe disconnect from the project because it could have been the situation that I look at my phone on a Sunday afternoon and I have 5 texts or calls from my participants because they wanted to tell me they're going to, I don't know, that they're sick or they're going to skip the next session or they have a question about their protocols or whatnot. So I think that was the main issue or mental health.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a lot of work and a lot of pressure. So how do you maintain balance, mental health, regarding your mental health during your PhD journey? So what kind of actions did you do to stay balanced still?
Of course, as a sports scientist, the first answer that pops into my head is exercise. and thankfully enough, I had the opportunity and could implement that during my PhD so far. So I was just, my exercise really helped me to shut my head off for 1 or 2 hours a day and just do something for myself and also be energized and have a clear head afterwards. I have a very supporting boyfriend who is also working as a postdoc at the university. He does something completely different, but he's gone through the same process. He's a little bit more experienced in the research area, so he could be by my side and support me through a lot of the difficult situations that I encountered. And therapy, I guess, which
that helps a lot.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Yes,
it is. I mean, it was initially not why I started therapy, but it turns out that my PhD was a topic that we talked about a lot, or still is, and it just helps to, I don't know, dump it on a person that's not involved every once in a while, being reassured, being made aware that, the process is going to be a long one, but you're going to manage and you're going to get through it.
Thank you, Johanna, for all that fascinating story about your research project and for your personal experiences. That was really insightful and helpful.
Yeah, thank you for the interesting discussions today. Stay healthy and balanced and see you next time. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Sarah
and Agnes. Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and experts' contributions on how to navigate the career path of a young scientist.
Next episode will be about drug development, AI, and saying no with Andrea and Christian from the Pharmaceutical Sciences Department.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional, and Sports Sciences.
Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening. See you next time.